This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Have you heard these names lately? Kay Hagan and Tom Tillis. Oh, yeah, you've heard them on radio, on TV, over and over again. The race for the state's U.S. Senate seat, one of the most expensive in history. But how does money make a difference, or does it? You know, recent polls show the candidates are neck and neck. Voters have started to make their choices in the state. Early voting began yesterday. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us now in what is his favorite time of the year, the run-up to the election. Hello, Ken.
You know, Frank, this is absolutely, if you're a political junkie, this is exactly the time that you wait for the longest time. And as depressing as so many of these campaigns are, especially in North Carolina, as a political junkie, you still have to just sit and marvel because nobody knows who's going to win.
You're just like a little kid. You sit there in your pajamas on the front porch waiting for the morning newspaper to arrive to see what's the latest in the polls. And, Ken, we're number one. We're number one in spending when not adjusted for inflation.
First of all, I have feet pajamas. I think that's a good visual for your listeners. But also, I mean, if you look at what's out there in 2014, I mean, there's no Senate race in New York or California or Ohio or Florida or those big states. And North Carolina is the largest state that's a crucial purple state that nobody knows who's going to win. So the outside money is just pouring in. And it's, of course, if you live in North Carolina, it's not fun because you just inundated 24/7 with all these ads.
And I guess when you adjust for inflation, in fact, Hillary Clinton's race, Senate race, was actually more expensive. But this one is notable for, as you mentioned, the outside money that's pouring in. Does that make a difference?
It does. And I mean, you know, everybody's talking about whether there's enough money, there's too much money in politics. But what the North Carolina race, the Tillis-Hagan race is showing is that I've never seen a campaign with so much outside money, so many negative campaigns or commercials are being aired.
Okay, here's the deal now. You talked about the negative ads, but negative has changed even in the political landscape. I mean, there was a time when a negative ad meant my opponent lied. You know, my opponent insulted a Boy Scout, something that would universally be considered negative. But look what's going for negative now. My opponent cut taxes and hurt education. Well, if you're Tom Tillis's base, I heard the cut taxes part, and what's wrong with that? Or my opponent supported Barack Obama. Well, if you're a Democrat, you voted for Barack Obama. What's wrong with that? I mean, it's a different kind of negative ad with a different appeal, isn't it?
Well, that's true. One person's negative ads could be somebody else's contrast ads, which may not be negative. But actually, you mentioned about my opponent voted with Barack Obama. I'm not sure how many Democrats are liking that kind of ad because there are so many Democrats who are running, especially candidates, are running away from President Obama throughout the country, not only in red states, but in blue states as well. And it's just going to be, it's obviously one of those dynamics that are going to make a big difference on November 4th.
How about the heavy hitters that are coming in for both candidates? Hillary Clinton's going to stump for Hagan, Mitt Romney and Rick Perry for Tillis. Does that matter in this state?
You kind of think that, I mean, ultimately there are very few undecided. So I kind of think with negative ads, with all the commercials, with all the outside folks, it's really to rally the base. I mean, Hillary Clinton is actually not doing as much as one would have thought, given the fact that she's the overwhelming frontrunner for 2016. But she is making more and more campaign appearances. And really also with the Romneys and the Rick Perrys and the Rand Pauls and the Ted Cruzes, who are the Republicans who are also campaigning around the country for fellow Republicans, Chris Christie as well. A lot of it is also about picking up chits for 2016.
You talked about the impact of Barack Obama running with him, running away from him throughout the state. Of course, we've been talking about the U.S. Senate race, but the congressional races are just as important. The 6th District congressional candidates, Republican Mark Walker and Democrat Laura Field, met yesterday in a debate on Time Warner Cable. And one of the topics, of course, the Affordable Care Act. Let's listen to what they had to say about that.
My approach is take line by line and try to turn some of the damaging things, specifically the corporate mandate. Have a friend back home who has 92 employees. He owns a Tri-City mechanical business. And the problem is that he's faced with hundreds of thousands of dollars of fine.
All right, there's Mark Walker. He's the Republican. Obamacare needs reform. Well, Laura Field agrees.
I believe that there are very specific things that we can do to fix this act. First among them is people who want to keep their plans should be able to. That was a promise. I believe it should be kept.
All right, so there we go. So the Affordable Care Act, I mean, how much does it matter to voters? Clearly the candidates are making it part of their campaign. They assume that this does make a difference. How is it playing in these elections? And maybe you can give us a comparison across the country.
Well, this fascinates me, too, because at the beginning of the year, obviously, we always thought that this was going to be a bad thing for the Democrats with that botched rollout, which people keep talking about. But ultimately, it seems like Obamacare is working for a lot of people. Now, premiums will rise, and they have been rising in some, so it may not be universally successful for everybody. For the most part, Democrats feel it is working. At least the White House feels is a success. And yet, not that many Democrats are running on that issue. If anything, they're doing what Laura Field is doing, saying, well, you know, we could fix it. We could do it better. We could do a better job with it. Instead of embracing it, they're basically criticizing Obama just as much as Mark Walker is. And it just seems like the Democrats are afraid to embrace it because they're looking at polls that show that the Affordable Care Act is still not a net positive with voters. And just Democrats feel like they're in a bind, and that's what you heard in that debate.
Well, it's been kind of interesting, though, in some ways, Ken, because what had been the most divisive debate in the political scene in America, the debate over the Affordable Care Act, may be bringing Republicans and Democrats together. Democrats suggesting, yes, we need some changes. Yes, we made some mistakes. And now we see Republicans, Tom Tillis, who ran an ad during the primary that where the announcer said, Tom Tillis stopped Obamacare in its tracks. And now, and of course, they rejected then the expansion of Medicaid, which meant 500,000 North Carolinians would go without care. They rejected hundreds of millions of federal dollars to expand Medicaid. And now Tom Tillis is saying, well, we might consider expanding Medicaid. So he's moving toward the Democrats. Would you say what's going on there?
Well, a part of it is looking at the way the polls are looking at it. And, of course, a lot of states, a lot of polls are indicating that when you reject federal money for expanding Medicaid.
We didn't do that. Something happened to Ken Rudin, the political junkie, and you're listening to Ken Rudin on The State of Things. Ken, of course, is a regular feature on The State of Things. We're going to try to get him back talking about the Affordable Care Act, its impact on the elections. Also, when the topic comes up, we're going to talk to him about this very important day in North Carolina history in Edenton. This is now the 240th anniversary of a Tea Party that goes little recognized in American history, and that is because this was a protest against the British organized by the women of Edenton, North Carolina. They sat around in one living room and decided they would no longer drink the accursed tea that had been taxed by the British. And that Tea Party celebration comes up this weekend. And it was the first, anyway, it's celebrated as the first successful political movement in the United States led by women. It was, as you can imagine, not taken seriously by contemporaries, but it's something we'll celebrate. Ken, are you back?
I'm here.
See, I don't know if you heard any of that, but we were just talking about this great anniversary, Edenton Tea Party, North Carolina, 240 years ago. Women organize against the accursed British and their nasty taxes and agree not to drink tea, which is no small sacrifice in those days. And it's recognized as the first women's protest, political protest in America. What do you know about it?
I don't know why. First of all, I have never heard of this before now, and I don't know why I didn't, because this is significant. When you think of the heroes of the American Revolution, you never think of women. You always think of, you know, just the guys who just led the rebellion against the British and the burning and the dumping of the tea. And to hear about these 51 women in Edenton who just, I mean, it was organized by women. They did this boycott. And basically, they really made a big difference in just rallying women around the country or the colonies to oppose the British. And it's a remarkable anniversary. And I just don't know why we never knew about this, or at least I never knew about it before. It seems pretty significant.
I think it's the part about them being women that keeps them from the headlines for so long.
I would say that should give them the headlines.
Well, it should have, but for a very long time, those kind of stories were suppressed, and hopefully now they'll see the light of day, and we'll talk more about the impact and the importance that women played in the political scene. But, you know, for a lot of time, there were just kind of white guys writing the story, Ken, and it didn't always come out right.
Well, I don't know. I mean, given the fact that this country is so thirsty and hungry for great, significant moments like this, I'm hoping that people will now remember this as a turning point, or at least a big turning point for women's involvement in politics. And I think this is a significant event that I actually will plan to look up much more about and read much more about.
Talk to all your audiences about it. By the way, the other part of that history they didn't tell was that the Tea Act actually reduced the price of tea. British, because of the protest against tea and the Townsend Acts, Americans stopped buying tea, and the British have more than they can use. How to do this? Well, one of the things that made the cost of tea so high was the fact that the British East India Tea Company had to import to London, pay a duty, offload it, sell it to middlemen, who then brought it to the United States and paid the duty and the tax. Very expensive. It made a big industry for smugglers. Then the British said, well, we got all this tea. What are we going to do? I know. How about if we sell directly to the Americans? We'll leave the tax on, but drop the duty. Tea prices plummet. Smugglers go out of business. Smugglers. It was sharp business people who wanted to maintain their exorbitant profits using the rhetoric of patriotism who actually were behind the Tea Party. I just want you to know that.
And that led to the Tea Party takeover of Congress in 2010.
I'm just saying there was an indigenous movement that was genuine resentment, but some people took advantage of it.
Absolutely remarkable.
I'm just saying that. Ken Rudin, you always learn something on this program. Back to your PJs, and it's always a pleasure. Thank you, Ken.
Happy Election Day. Thanks, Frank.
Coming up on The State of Things, there is more to come. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.